Thank you, Matt. I'm honored to be here. I'm not a scientist like the rest of you, so you're probably all smarter than I am here in this room. I'm with the Delaware Maryland Agribusiness Association. I have been for the last 3 or 4 years in the center of the Chesapeake Bay political and sometimes science dialogue. My mission as an association is real clear: to defend the continued use of fertilizer and pesticides in Delaware and Maryland, which is a challenge. I prepared some slides here, so it looks like I was prepared and organized, and I will try to stick to them. As Cliff and I talked before, writing an abstract 6 months ago, it's hard to remember even what you wrote. But I must say, being here with you scientists this week has really influenced some of my thoughts on these issues and some of the challenges and conclusions that I have at the end. So in looking at this title, The Role of Government Programs in Adopting Nitrogen Conservation Technologies, strikes me as a strange title to begin with. If I was sitting here in a room full of farmers in Maryland, they would probably be booing me for the thought that, why do we need the government involved in nitrogen decisions on our farm at all? And I would say to you, as university and extension scientists, do you need the government helping you decide in your states and in your counties and your watersheds what is good nitrogen technology? These are the four things I said I was going to talk about. I'll try to stay to that. I know what I know, but I have no idea what you know. Here's a list of NRCS programs. How many of you know what environmental quality incentive programs are? Okay, so EQIP, incentive payments to farmers for adopting practices. How about conservation stewardship program? Well, hey, you guys are pretty good, okay? This has continued to now pay farmers for enhancements on their farms. How about Cooperative Conservation Partnership Initiative? CCPI. My vision is blurring. I see no hands on this one. How about Conservation Innovative Grants? You're awake again. Mississippi River Basin Healthy Watershed Initiative. Well, I got a couple there too. All right, then we got some work to do here. So underwater quality enhancements, and I hope you can see that little print there. There's a whole bunch of enhancements that farmers can do and get paid from NRCS. Some of these should look should look familiar to you. Things like controlled-release nitrogen fertilizer, split applications, precision application technologies. These are all pretty basic precision nutrient management, nutrient use efficiency type practices that farmers can get paid for under CSP. Mississippi River Basin Healthy Watershed Initiative. So this came out last year of NRCS, Chief White, a delegation of $320 million over the next four fiscal years to deal with nutrient issues in those blue states from Louisiana to Minnesota. There was an RFP on this, starting with the CCPI and then the SIG for fiscal year 10. And the fiscal year 11 RFP is up on the website as of yesterday when I looked. How many of you at your universities or extension got any pieces of this money? You were really hesitant there. You sure you got some? Okay, you think you got some, all right? So this was the approach. Again, targeted watersheds where NRCS took eight-digit HUCs throughout those states and said, we will take proposals in those eight-digit HUCs based on practices in 12-digit HUCs within those 8-digit HUCs. So each proposal was fairly narrow in the geography, some of them covering, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 acres of total land mass to do proposals on. I didn't want to do that one yet. Okay, so now CCPI. So CCPI is an opportunity to pool NRCS EQIP money under one bundle. So for example, if you said in one of these 8-digit HUCs, you wanted to go in and do precision nutrient management, or you wanted to do nitrogen efficiency practices, NRCS would say, okay, we'll give you $1 million to go on the ground and work on that specific topic. Unfortunately, not a single university received any of that $50 million. Because the groups that got the money were groups like the Nature Conservancy, Watershed Coalitions, American Farmland Trust, Ducks Unlimited. And the reason is they wrote the RFP with no provision for overhead. So essentially, you at the university would have to use your own funds to pay your staff to go out and advance these practices. I would suggest to you, if you could receive $50 million in those Mississippi River states to support university in-field, on-field demonstrations of these nitrogen conservation technologies, that would be a substantial piece of money to advance nitrogen conservation technologies in the Midwest. So one of the challenges is, a question was raised to Dr. Paul Fixon 2 days ago on, well, we can't get funding for these. Yeah, here's an example where you didn't get funding because you were not at the table. So how do you get to the table? Well, wait till we get to the conclusion, okay? The majority of the money went to soil and water conservation districts. In particular, like Mississippi Soil and Water Conservation Commission got $4.4 million. Delta Farm got $3.3 million. $7.7 million in Mississippi alone out of this $50 million. And none of you were part of this. Now, there's an interesting story here that they've got the $7.7 million. Indeed, I sat down at the beginning of September with Trey Cook, executive director of Delta Farm, and he has a pool of $21 million, not for all Mississippi, but for the Yazoo River Delta. $21 million. And he came to Jimmy Sanders in Cleveland, Mississippi, and said, okay, we really understand what happens from the Mississippi to the tributaries to the water. We have no idea what's going on in field. Can you help us? Can Jimmy Sanders, through their OptiGrow program, a precision agriculture, collaborate with Delta Farm on all this $21 million of projects they have to try to look at how do we bring our arms around what's happening with nitrogen and phosphorus in these fields? So there is an opportunity with these kind of grants, because the people getting the money, whether it's American Farmland Trust, as Harold Reitz can say, they don't have any boots on the ground. They are now coming to CCAs and saying, I got this money, how do I now do something with it? But I would suggest to you, if you're in line first for the money, you're going to have much more control of it than having to go knock on the door of Environmental Defense Fund and say, okay, you've got $5 million. Is there a piece of it there for us? All right, Conservation Innovative Grant. There was one bright spot, which of that $5 million, and if you're from University of Wisconsin and you answered that question, you were correct, kind of. All right, so here is University of Wisconsin-Madison and Landmark Cooperative. They've come together. The project is a 300-acre, I think Wisconsin calls them discovery farms, where they're going to use Landmark's commercial precision agriculture practices, technologies on the farm with University of Wisconsin getting the grant. So here's a business model of the university and private industry using private industry technology to advance nutrient technology with NRCS money that I would suggest to you as a potential business model in each of your states. One comment, if you haven't seen the assessment, the SEEP on NRCS, I suggest you go back and look at that. That came out in June. For our nutrient stewardship practices are very much part of this. I know you're all familiar with 4R nutrient stewardship. Chesapeake Bay. I chair the Maryland State Technical Committee, NRCS, Nutrient Subcommittee, and we, for about 3 or 4 years now, have adopted in our 590 standards. As you know, we have national 590, and then the states can exceed those. We have practices that we have been funding in Maryland and Delaware under the incentive programs. So, you know, proper rate, timing, proper placement, form, enhanced nutrient management, decision support systems, which is the, you know, use of GPS, use of data layers from plant populations to genetics, to harvest dates, to soil types, herbicides, fungicides, and then evaluating those, not only individual farms, but combining those into community databases. So if a farmer says, okay, I'm in Frederick County, Maryland, and there's 15,000 farmers enrolled in a decision support system, I not only want to know how I did on my farm, I want to be able to benchmark on the same soil types of every other farm that planted wheat or corn. So NRCS in Maryland has been funding this. So I would suggest to you a role for you scientists at your state technical committees with NRCS to advocate these kinds of innovative nitrogen technologies to complement your extension outreach programs. Some national stuff that some of you may or may not see. There's a lot of words there. This is for fiscal year 11 that started October 1st. We now have a new national nutrient management strategy that is going to take 590 and break it into a basic 590. So every farmer that's going to get a contract for 590 nutrient management standard, which includes anybody doing a CNMP. So if you're an animal operation that under a federal permit must do a CNMP, that 590 is embedded to that, you're now going to have to do the 4Rs under nutrient management. You will have to do for fall applied nitrogen and spring applied nitrogen inhibitors. This is a very aggressive move by NRCS. And then they're also doing a second tier now of enhanced 590 with spring application only, grid zone soil testing, chlorophyll, controlled release nitrogen, PSNTs. I sat down yesterday with Norm Weedman of, okay, now that you've done this, this has been distributed to the state agronomists. How are you now going to do the outreach down to the local conservation districts? So that when a farmer walks in to that conservation district and says, I've got something here that I got an email on, I can get money for using a urease inhibitor, or I can get money for doing grid zone soil testing. How are you going to have the conservation district NRCS local person say, oh, I understand this, I can help you with this, versus I have no idea what you're talking about, come back another day, right? How do we leverage this? Now, what's the potential for you in university? Well, if you can reach out through your newsletters and communications and get 1,000 farmers, can get 20 farmers in a watershed to enroll in this, look at the richness of data that you would have the potential to collect. So what I would suggest to you in this round of CCPI and Conservation Innovative Grant to leverage now these equipped new two tiers of 590, How can you leverage that to support your program, advance your program, create databases of real in-field data points to advance your message in extension? I did that one. So I can't leave you without talking something about the Chesapeake Bay, because we have a screwed up mess in the Chesapeake Bay. We have not only gotten policy ahead of science, we have gotten policy without science. We have gotten policy with EPA unwilling to share science. Tomorrow at the Chesapeake Bay Commission in Virginia, which is the legislative representatives of the House and Senate Ag Committees in Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, I'm proposing a resolution to do a one-day workshop request to EPA to have a technical review of the Chesapeake Bay model and the nutrient sediment scenario builder, which is the ag inputs, parameters, assumptions, and outputs, okay? EPA is establishing TMDLs, and literally nobody has ever seen the science. There is no understanding. Farmers are going to be asked to deal with regulations based on load calculations that EPA is unwilling to share with the ag community, with the state agencies, with the universities, how they came up with these numbers. EPA is, as of yesterday, trying to block my resolution to the commission tomorrow, so it's never even brought to a vote. This is not good public policy. And each of you should be concerned if, in your states, whether we're talking about the, you know, Mississippi Delta nutrient reduction strategy, whether it's in Illinois Nutrient Summit, whether it's the Missouri River and what USGS and the Corps of Engineers are trying to do in Iowa, is if your farmers are going to be restricted on fertilizer applications in your state and you're not part of that discussion, is this good public policy? Now, I have to take one step back. It took me a long time to figure this out. Is, you know, it's easy to say that it's an easy media bite of the answer is to reduce fertilizer applications. But why does EPA think this way? This is why EPA thinks this way, is if you've got a pipe going into the Potomac River from a sewage treatment plant and it's putting out too much nitrogen phosphorus, you close the valve. That's the EPA mentality with agriculture. If agriculture loads are getting too much nitrogen and phosphorus into the Potomac or the Mississippi or the Missouri, the answer is to close the valve. If you decrease fertilizer applications, the logic is you're going to have less nitrogen phosphorus in the water. Simple as that. So now you're seeing science trying to support that, or as I call it, junk science, like the whole issue of pea soil saturation. Well, the one paper that they're using by Dr. Tom Simpson says, and I don't know if it's right or not, is a corn plant needs 20 to 30% pea soil saturation to grow. So if we set a bright line that any farmer that has 20% can no longer apply phosphorus, there's the science. Real easy to understand, real easy for EPA to legislate and regulate. So this best expresses for me EPA's understanding of fertilizer. Now, some people have said that's me, but that's not me. I don't wear black socks when I wear black shorts. I mean, has anybody seen this before? This was used by EPA in a media campaign in suburban Washington, Northern Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia, to try to get homeowners to stop applying fertilizer to their lawns. This is an EPA-funded print campaign. You see the end of the pipe problem? So as Cliff talks about, well, yield is part of this. No, EPA considers yield a static number. We still, until this last run of the model, have been using 1985 yields as the crop uptakes for nutrients. In model 5.3, that is now what's setting the TMDLs, to give you an example of the science, is EPA says we're going to take the 95th percentile of each crop yield in the ag census for the last 30 years. Ag census every 5 years. So we're ending up for corn based on Sussex County, Delaware, in 1997, that the output for corn is 109 bushels of corn for every acre in all six states from now to 2025. That's the science. All right, NRCS came out with SEEP here just the last 2 weeks. So we now got this to kick around. And we have a term called undertreated acres, where acres have not received full use of the 4Rs. That is 81% of the cropland requires additional nutrient management to reduce loss of nitrogen and phosphorus. Pretty sad number, in my opinion. But a tremendous opportunity is, again, what is your folks' roles as scientists in getting nutrient use efficiencies, nitrogen conservation technologies on the ground with your farmers in those states? It hits me strangely that, of course, it's an undertreated acres concept, meaning that farmers are polluting, versus a underproducing acres. Wouldn't it be nice if we had USDA do an assessment of states that are underproducing food? I use the example all the time of Penn State has a 5-acre corn club, where a farmer can enroll 5 acres, and they always, you know, put on 3,000 pounds of nitrogen, and they, you know. But in York County, Pennsylvania, in the last good year, like 2008, the winter had over 250 bushels of corn. In the same soils, in the same climate in York County, the average yield is 115 bushels. One farmer can grow 250 bushels, but half the farmers can barely get over 100. Is there a mission there for Penn State University that they're missing? Do you have the same situation in your university? I used in testimony to the Pennsylvania Senate of, if you could get the county average in Pennsylvania, you know, up 10 bushels, the economic impact to the state of Pennsylvania, to your farmers, to your communities, is $50 million. How do we get that low producing acres into higher producing acres instead of this dialogue of how do we limit nitrogen and phosphorus applications? 590, I think everybody knows about 0.17 and 590. I won't say anything about that. Guidance on phosphorus management. EPA came out here in May with a CAFO technical standard, and I want to bring to your attention again this 20% soil P saturation concept. This is an EPA concept. EPA is quite serious that they have the authority under the Chesapeake Bay Executive Order to regulate in federally permitted CAFOs, which there are thousands of in the Chesapeake Bay, There's 750 poultry CAFOs just in Maryland and Delaware, and then we've got dairy and so forth, that this is going to be an enforcement limit that EPA wants to put in place. The final point that I was supposed to talk about was enforcement. There's an interesting piece in Senate Bill 1816, which is sponsored by Senator Cardin from Maryland, which talks about safe harbor provisions. This is another scary piece, the concept of, all right, today farmers have an exemption under the Clean Water Act for land-applied nutrients. Under this in the Chesapeake Bay, we're going to take that away, but if you follow what EPA defines as conservation, they will give you a safe harbor from enforcement. So this puts EPA squarely in the position to define what a conservation plan is on your farm and do enforcement on your farm based on their definition of conservation plans. This is a program we've got in Maryland with the Maryland Grain Producers, which is the National Corn Growers chapter in Maryland, where they're doing certified agriculture conservation stewardship, where they're going out and assessing individual farms. There's other states that have similar things. Michigan has a program. So the concept that farmer-to-farmer peer groups are doing assessments of conservation on farms to preempt enforcement by state or federal agencies, that's an interesting model. Adaptive nutrient management, I think there's been enough said this week about that, and the role of, you know, extension university recommendations for nitrogen versus allowing some third-party group based on some amount of community data to recommend lower application rates. So, in conclusion, target local. The money's flowing to dealing with small units. Target 12-digit watersheds. Target a species of farmer, say, dairy or poultry or cotton, and target individual practices. That's where the money flow is. Manage field specific. There has to be more and more work of how do you deal instead of with regional or state recommendations with manage field. Expand knowledge. You know, the term is always used about technology transfer. But there's going to have to be some technology or knowledge expansion to newspaper editorial boards, to NRCS state technical committees. And is that part of your role as university and extension? Partner and collaborate. We talked about CCPI, talked about SIGS, the ability to collaborate with the private sector, with certified crop advisors. And what does that mean to your group? And finally, I wrote here sell conservation, but you know, I've changed that this week to sell productivity. Is how do you sell productivity to your stakeholders and the policymakers? We're running into this tremendous risk in public policy today of a disconnect from science, where the work that you folks do becomes irrelevant. That EPA, USDA find your research inconvenient because it doesn't meet little quick 15-minute sound bites. It doesn't answer the agenda that they have. So I guess I'd like to leave you with really a wild thought that inspired me this week is, you need to change the political dialogue, because only you understand this issue of global food security, of crop productivity. EPA doesn't understand it. Unfortunately, USDA, with the people that are being politically appointed from Environmental Defense Fund and river alliances, don't understand it. So think about what would it mean in this society to have your lobbyists here. Why isn't Carl Glassner here giving a presentation? Bruce Knight is here. Why isn't he giving a presentation? And the final thing I want to leave you with is, if you're going to have political change in the way you think about science, you're going to have political appointees. So I'd like to nominate for 2012 as the next USDA Secretary of Agriculture, Dr. Chuck Rice, and suggest to you that would that be a paradigm shift to have one of your members be the next Secretary of USDA? Thank you.